The world of Kryn, your world, reels from the violence of a brutal war of conquest. From out of the nightmares of the past, dragons have returned to Kryn after an absence of many years. Aided by these serpentine monsters, armies of evil have spread across the continent of Anzalon, seeking to subjugate all the free people of your land. Here we go again. It seems like there's always some kind of war on Kryn. Hey, the new book's coming out. I want to get caught up so we know what's happening. Yeah, but this story's been going on for like 40 years. How about we just get a recap or something? All right, time for some Eldritch history. This week, we're talking all about the novels of Dragonlance. Now, as much as I wish I could detail all of them, there's about 200 of them currently, so well beyond the scope of a single podcast episode. But since I'm doing this specifically because on August 2nd, 2022, Dragons of Deceit by Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman is coming out, the first Dragonlance novel in over a decade, I figured this would be a good time to detail the books that I think will have the biggest impact on the story of the new book coming out. And I'll explain more about my reasoning behind this at the end when it will make more sense and you have more details. But I figured I'll go through the books, detail their plots for people who have read them, but it's been a while and want to be caught up, or for people who haven't read them, but who want to read the new book. This will give them some background in order to better understand what might be happening. Or this could just be, if people are interested in the story of Dragonlance, here's an easier way than reading the 9 books that I'll be detailing here. So specifically on this episode, I'll be going over the first 6 books of Dragonlance, as well as 3 later editions that kind of fill in some gaps. So those books are the Chronicles trilogy, which is comprised of Dragons of Autumn Twilight, Dragons of Winter Night, and Dragons of Spring Dawning, as well as the Legends trilogy, which is made up of Time of the Twins, War of the Twins, and Test of the Twins. And then I'll also briefly detail the Lost Chronicles, comprised of Dragons of the Dwarven Depths, Dragons of the High Lord Skies, and Dragons of the Hourglass Mage. Now, there is a lot of material to cover, so I want to get into it as quickly as possible. But first, some background on the setting and the world of Dragonlance in order to set you up for what's to come. The big thing I want to point out is that Dragonlance is set on the world of Kryn, and the timeline of that world is divided into various ages. The first age is known as the Time of Creation, where the gods are born from chaos, and the gods in turn create the world of Kryn. The second age is known as the Age of Dreams, and it sees the rise of the sentient races and civilization. You see the origins of human, elf, dwarf, gnomes, and minotaur, as well as kender, which is Dragonlance's version of halflings. They're described as brave, fearless, taunting, and cute, with an insatiable curiosity and an innocent tendency to borrow things for indeterminate periods of time. Second Age also is where the Dragon Wars take place, and it's the creation of the eponymous Dragon Lances, which are magical weapons made using multiple artifacts, and they are one of the very few ways mere mortals are able to kill dragons. The Third Age, the Age of Might, is mostly known for the time of the Cataclysm, in which kingdoms and countries are destroyed, the seas change, and gods, dragons, and healing magic all disappear from the world of Kryn, which leads us into the Fourth Age, the Age of Despair, a period of 300 years of depression, which is where almost all the novels we're talking about today take place. We'll see one brief departure into just before the Cataclysm, but for the most part, we're in the Age of Despair, and later novels really explore all the ages in some way, shape, or form. But for our purposes, mostly we need to focus on this Age of Despair. That's where we're at on the timeline as the books start out. And the Dragonlance novels have always been ensemble pieces, but the main characters to know about, especially for the books we're talking about, are the Heroes of the Lance, also known as the Companions, who are described in my copy of the first book as an unlikely group of heroes. And I'll give you the brief introduction to each character that's given in the front of the first book. Tanis Half-Elven, who, as you might guess, is a half-elf. He's the leader of the Companions, a skilled fighter who detests fighting. He is tormented by love for two women, the tempestuous swordswoman Katiara and the enchanting elf maiden Lorana. Sturm Brightblade, who is a knight of Salamnia, who were once revered in the days before the Cataclysm, the knights have since fallen into disgrace. Sturm's goal, more important to him than life itself, is to restore the honor of the knighthood. There's Gold Moon, who's a chieftain's daughter, bearer of the blue crystal staff. Her love for a tribal outcast Riverwind leads them both on a dangerous quest in search of truth. Riverwind, the grandson of a wanderer, is given the blue crystal staff in a city where death flew on black wings. He barely escaped with his life, and that was only the beginning. Raistlin, Caramon's twin brother, magic user. Though his health is shattered, Raistlin possesses great powers beyond his young age, but dark mysteries are concealed behind his strange eyes. Caramon, Raistlin's twin brother, warrior. A genial giant of a man, Caramon is the exact opposite of his twin. Raistlin is the one person he cares for, and the one person he fears. Flint Fireforge, dwarf, fighter. Tanis' oldest friend, the ancient dwarf regards these youngsters as his children. And finally, Tasselhoff Burfoot, Kender, handler. Kender, the nuisance race of Kryn, are immune to fear. Consequently, trouble just seems to follow them home. And those are our heroes, as described at the beginning of the first book, along the many novels they'll gain members, as well as friends and allies, encounter terrible enemies, and will lose some of the companions along the way. All right, so before we get into the books themselves, obviously I'm summarizing a bunch of books in a less than hour-long podcast, so I'm going to leave stuff out, just the way it's got to be, especially character development and stuff like that. There are many people who really love the characters in this book, which really has to be due to the writing of Margaret Weis and Tracy Hickman, who have written all the books we're talking about today, and their novels really are seen as the core books for Dragonlance, which now is a good time to point out, if it wasn't obvious, major spoilers ahead. I'll be going through the entire plot lines of these books. Spoilers ahead. You've been warned. Okay, without further ado, we've set the stage. We've met the heroes of the Lance. We know that we're taking place post-cataclysm in the Age of Despair, where gods, dragons, and healing magic have all disappeared from the face of Kryn. So, without further ado, we start with the Dragons of Autumn Twilight. And the story begins with a group of friends, Raistlin, Caramon, Tanis, Tasselhoff, and Flint, returning to the tree-lofted city of Solace at the Inn of the Last Home. They had spent the previous 5 years searching for proof of the true god's existence. When they arrive, Raistlin is the one who's most dramatically changed. He now has white hair, golden skin, and hourglass-shaped pupils for his eyes. They also are given a note by the barmaid at the inn, Tika Whalen. She'll become more important later. She gives them a note from Katiara, who is Raistlin and Caramon's half-sister, as well as one of the love interests of Tanis. And she says she is unable to attend due to obligations to her new lord. An ominous note that will also pay off later. So when they arrive at Solace, they find it's under control of the Seekers, who is a religious group who are seeking new gods as the old ones have abandoned them. They also find that the Seekers are working with the Dragon High Lords, who are the leaders of the dragon armies of the evil goddess Takhesis. She is the goddess of the chromatic evil dragons and is usually depicted as a five-headed dragon with one head for each color of the chromatic dragons, often seen as Kryn's version of the goddess Tiamat from other settings of D&D. Her dragon high lords are preparing to conquer the entire continent of Ancillon, which is where all these novels take place. And while at the inn, the companions encounter Riverwind and Goldmoon, and it's revealed that Goldmoon possesses the blue crystal staff, which is a holy artifact of the goddess Mishakal. And this is revealed when Goldmoon uses it to heal a seeker. A huge deal, because healing magic has not been around for 300 years at this point. And the companions all escape the ensuing bar fight. And during their flight, Raistlin notes that the constellation, the Valiant Warrior and the Queen of Darkness, representing Paladin, the good draconic god, and Takhesis, who's also his sister, These constellations are missing from the sky, meaning that they have returned to Kryn. And the next day, the group is attacked by Draconians, who are corrupted dragon humanoid beings. And eventually, the group is saved and brought before the Forest Master, a talking unicorn. And they are tasked with retrieving the discs of Mishakal, the goddess of Goldmoon's staff. And it's said that these discs contain the teachings of the true gods and are needed to restore their faith. So the companions go to where these discs are supposed to be, and they encounter a dragon who is destroyed by the power of the blue crystal staff, which also consumes Goldmoon in this holy flame. And they think that she's dead, but they later find her alive and resting at the feet of a statue of Mishakal and see that she's gained true cleric powers. The companions are able to recover the discs of Mishakal, and Raistlin gains an ancient spellbook of the evil archmage Fistendantilus, who lived for centuries and was around during the time of the Cataclysm. So, returning to Solace, they find it occupied by the dragon armies, and Tika, the barmaid from earlier, she saves the life of an elf revealed to be Gilthanas Kanan, the prince of the Qualinestri elves, which is the elven nation where Tanis was born. But the heroes are captured and put in a slave caravan bound for the fortress Pax Tharkas. Along the way, they meet a seemingly senile wizard named Fizban and are eventually saved by an elven attack on the caravan led by Gilthanas' brother, Portheos, who's there to save him, but manages to save all the companions. So they all travel to Qualinestri, where Gilthanas and Portheos and Tanis are from, and they plan to attack Pax Tharkas to free the slaves that did go there and get it out of the control of the dragon High Lord, Verminard. While in Qualinestri, they also encounter Tanis's fiance, Princess Lorana Kanan, sister of Gilthanas and Portheos. But Tanis breaks off their engagement due to his love of Kitiara, the absent half-sister of Raistlin and Caramon, who did not join the reunions. So the companions, along with Tika, Gilthanas, and Fizban, all head for Pax Tharkas. Along the way, they meet a human warrior named Eben Shatterstone, and discover that Lorana has been following them, but it's too late to send her back. So they use a secret route into Pax Tharkas, but are confronted by a banshee, which Raistlin is able to protect them from, but Tasselhoff and Fizban are separated from the group. So the companions reach the slaves, and Goldmoon heals a dying seeker named Elistan. She's able to convert him to the faith of the true gods and actually gives him the discs of Mishakal. And he would go on to become the first cleric of Paladin and the leader of Paladin's church on Kryn. Meanwhile, Tasselhoff and Fizban discover there's a traitor in the ranks, but are attacked by a red dragon named Ember. Fizban is lost, and Ember activates the fortress's defenses. The rest of the companions find the slave children, but they are being guarded by a senile red dragon named Flamestrike, who actually believes the children of the slaves are her own children. They find out that Eben is the traitor, and High Lord Verminard appears on the back of Ember and threatens every man, woman, and child. But his threats on the children cause Flamestrike, that older dragon, to attack Ember in a rage, and a slave uprising occurs as well. Eben the traitor tries to sneak away with a mysterious figure known as the Everman, but they are both crushed by falling rocks due to Ember's actions. The companions win the battle, kill Verminard, and Flamestrike sacrifices herself to kill Ember. And in the aftermath, Goldmoon and Riverwind get married, and the Everman, who was crushed, is somehow alive, is spotted at the ceremony, but he flees once he's seen. And the book ends with Raistlin ominously saying that although they won the battle, they haven't won the war yet. The second book is Dragons of Winter Night, and it picks up not too long after the first book ends. But in exchange for the Hammer of Karas, who is a legendary hero, the refugees the companions saved from Pax Tharkas are granted temporary haven in the dwarven city of Thorbarden. The companions go on to search for a permanent home for the refugees and meet the Silvanestri princess, Alhanna Starbreeze. And the Silvanestri are a different group of elves on Kryn. They also encounter a small group of Knights of Salamnia, the group that Sturm is a part of, which is led by Derek Crowngard. They manage to learn about the existence of dragon orbs, which are ancient magical artifacts that can control dragons. But a dragon attack that destroys the city they're in separates the companions into two groups. Tanis, Riverwind, Goldmoon, Caramon, Raceland, and Tika are rescued by Alhanna, while Lurana, Gilthanas, Sturm, Flint, Tazahoff, and Elistan escape with Derek and the Knights. And the group with Alhanna head to Sylvanesti, her ancient elven homeland, and discover it's been caught in a manifested nightmare caused by the elven king, her father's, attempt to utilize a dragon orb. The companions, including the ones who aren't with that group, are all caught up in this waking dream and experience visions of their own deaths. But once again, Raceland is able to defeat the threat, which is a green dragon who's responsible for manipulating this dreaming. And they escape and retrieves the dragon orb. The other group, the one with Derek and the Knights, heads far south, where Lurana kills the white dragon High Lord, and they retrieve a second dragon orb. And en route to the Knights' base of Sancrist, they are attacked by a white dragon and shipwrecked, and they wind up on this island that's got tensions between three rival groups of elves. The Qualanestri, which Lurana and her brothers are part of, the Sylvanestri, like Alhanna and her people, as well as a third group known as Wild Elves. So amid the tensions, this half of the companions encounter a group of hostile Sylvanestri elves, and Gilthanas is actually knocked unconscious before Lurana can defuse the situation. And once she does, the Sylvanesti have a wild elf named Silvara heal Gilthanas, and they escort the group to a Qualanestri elf city. Unfortunately, the Qualanestri are no better. They snub Lurana, insult her family, and imprison the non-elves, and take the dragon orb. But Lurana, Gilthanas, Silvara, and a human blacksmith named Theros Ironfeld manage to steal the dragon orb, free the others, and they all flee while pursued by the elves. Derek and Sturm's relationship grows tense when Sturm refuses an order to attack the elves, but the two knights take the orb to their original destination, the knights based on Sancrist, while the rest of the party lures away the elves. While doing so, Silvara leads them to the tomb of Huma Dragonbane, this legendary hero. And they meet up with Fizban, who is somehow alive after his encounter with Ember. And Silvara reveals that she's actually a silver dragon, and she agrees to help the party in forging the dragon lances, those ancient weapons made for killing dragons, in order to turn the tide of the war. Meanwhile, the Knights of Salamnia call together a council to form an alliance to help fight the dragon armies, but infighting occurs due to various prejudices and desire for the dragon orb, which leads Tasselhoff to just destroy the artifact. And before the ramifications of that action really take hold, Theros, the blacksmith, demonstrates the power of his newly forged dragonlance and is able to restore order. Also at this council, Lurana and Flint help exonerate Sturm from charges that Derek has brought against him in the Knightly Order, and Sturm is actually placed as third in command of a force of knights who are sent to defend the High Claris Tower in Salamnia, which is a very strategic point in the mountains between two nations. And Lurana is asked to accompany him to help deliver the dragon lances, having impressed some of the higher-up knights while defending Sturm. So the other group of the companions has been laying low in a port city, which is currently occupied by the Blue Dragon Army. Raceland has gained power over their dragon orb, and Tanis and Caramon manage to steal officer uniforms to blend in with the dragon army. But Tanis is attacked in a back alley and is rescued by Kitiara, who reveals that she's actually risen to the rank of Dragon High Lord in charge of the Blue Dragon Army. Tanis claims to be a new officer under her command in order to cover up his actual intentions and to help protect the rest of his friends. And afterwards, the two resume their love affair. At the High Claris Tower, the Knights of Salamnia, along with Lurana, Flint, and Tass, have fortified it, but are greatly outnumbered by a besieging Blue Dragon army, and they're low on supplies and morale. Tensions between Derek and Sturm have led to a split in the ranks of the Knights, and Derek becomes increasingly desperate and orders a frontal assault on their enemies, reasoning that they're going to flee before the might and strength of the Knights. Sturm sees this as suicide and refuses the order on behalf of his men. But Derek leads the attack anyways, which results in their slaughter. And the dragon army commander, Bakaris, taunts the knights with their lord's disembodied head and a dying Derek, until Lorana shoots an arrow into his arm. The dragon army attacks the tower the next day, but the few knights, who are now under the command of Sturm, are able to repel the attack. Tasselhoff manages to find another dragon orb deep within the tower and shows Lorana how to use it. And she realizes that the tower was designed to trap and kill dragons. So Sturm goes to fight the approaching blue dragons to buy time for them to set the trap. And he successfully stalls them for a while, but is eventually killed by Kitiara. Lorana uses the dragon orb to lure two dragons into traps where the knights are able to kill them with the dragon lances. The orb also drives the draconians insane and collapses the blue dragon army into chaos. Lorana is exhausted from using the orb, but rushes forward to help defend Sturm's body from that chaos, where Kitiara confronts and disarms her, then taunts her with the fact that Tanis is with her now, and she instructs Lorana to give Sturm a knight's funeral before she leaves without harming Lorana. The book ends with that funeral for Sturm, who is buried underneath the tower, having really fulfilled his goal of serving as an inspiration for what the Knights of Salamnia should be. The third book is Dragons of Spring Dawning, which once again picks up right where the last one left off. This time going back to Tanis, who's able to reunite with his companions, which, to remind you, are Goldmoon, Riverwind, Tika, Caramon, and Raistlin. He's able to do this while Kitiara is in Salamnia, filling the end of the previous book. Tanis admits he had to impersonate an officer to deceive a High Lord, but he hides the fact that it was Kitiara due to his shame of reuniting with her. This group of companions take a ship where the Everman, that mysterious figure from the first book, is now going by the name of Barum and is a helmsman, and they set sail. But they're attacked by Kitiara and her remaining forces, and Barum the Everman panics and steers the ship straight into a whirlpool. Raistlin uses his dragon orb to save himself, as he's unwilling to risk the more dangerous task of saving all the companions. And soon after he leaves, the ship and everyone else vanish beneath the waves. Raistlin reappears in the Great Library of Palanthus, home to Astinus, who is said to be the first and supposedly the last living thing on Kryn. He'll show up a bunch in later works too. Astinus chronicles the entire history of the world, and he knows Raistlin, though the mage has no knowledge of ever having met him, and the strain of the spell that saved Raistlin is also killing him. And in saying goodbye, Astinus lets slip that the gods possess the Key of Knowledge, which is this formula that would unlock ancient spells that had been lost to time. And Raistlin seemed to make a dark bargain with a mysterious entity or force and vanishes. Meanwhile, Tass, Flint, and Lorana uncover information on the Tower of High Sorcery of Palanthus, this mysterious, almost ghost story-esque place of incredible magic. Lorana is named the commander of the Knights of Salamnia in Palanthus due to her contributions in fighting off the Blue Dragon army, and Astinus tells her to forget about Tanis and the dragon orbs. Then her brother Gilthanas and Silvara, the silver dragon lady, bring the good dragons to Palanthus. Previously, the good dragons were staying out of the war because the dragon armies had taken their eggs hostage. But now it's revealed that the draconians are actually made from corrupting those eggs. So the good dragons join the fight to avenge their young. Gilthanas then reveals to Lorana that he overheard Kitiara talking about how Tanis was serving her. Lorana goes on to organize a flying cavalry of knights astride good dragons while wielding dragon lances. And they take the offensive, winning victory after victory, and causing Lorana to become known as the Golden General. Flint and Tass actually ride a bronze dragon in one of the attacks and capture Kitiara's second-in-command, Bakaris. But Kitiara sends Lorana a note saying that Tanis has been mortally wounded and wants to see her. And Kitiara will only allow this in exchange for the safe return of Bakaris. Flint and Tass believe this to be a ploy, but based off their previous meetings and Gilthanas' confirmation that Tanis is with Kitiara, Lorana believes it to be the truth. Meanwhile, Emperor Ariakas, leader of the dragon armies, plans to execute Kitiara for her repeated failures against Lorana, but his hand is stayed by Lord Soth. And Lord Soth is one of my favorite characters from D&D in general, let alone Dragonlance. He's absolutely terrible in all the best ways, and he is a one-time knight of Salamnia who completely fell from grace, made absolutely awful, terrible decisions that actually wound up with the cataclysm happening when he had a chance to stop it, and he was cursed thereafter to become a death knight. This undead warrior who, if you look in the 5th edition Monster Manual, the Death Knight picture there is actually Lord Soth. He's great, and I'll definitely be having an episode dedicated to him. Kitiara convinces the Emperor that she has a plan to capture the Golden General, Lorana, and turn the tide of the war. So Lorana, Flint, and Tess sneak Bakaris to the rendezvous point, which, of course, is a trap. Bakaris wants revenge for the lasting injury Lorana dealt to his arm at the High Claris Tower, as well as revenge for being captured. And he knocks out Flint and is going after Lorana when Tess sneaks up and stabs him, and Lorana manages to kill Bakaris. But before they can leave, they encounter Lord Soth, who takes Lorana prisoner. It's then revealed that Tanis and the rest of the companions from his ship, along with Barum the Everman, actually survive the whirlpool and are in the sunken city of Istar, now inhabited by the sea elves who saved them. After convincing the leader of the sea elves to help them back to the surface, they wash up on the shores with only vague memories of Istar. And they are able to reunite with Tass and Flint, who catch them up on everything that happened. Then Kitiara arrives and demands the unconditional surrender of the knights, the elves, the dwarves, and the good dragons, and the delivery of Barum the Everman to her at the Temple of Takesis, or else she'll kill Lorana. Tanis, Caramon, Tika, Flint, and Tass resolve to go with Barum the Everman to try and save Lorana, but Tanis refused to allow Riverwind and Goldmoon to join, as they now have a child on the way. On the way, they meet up with Fizban, but Barum the Everman runs off and Flint follows him, but during the chase, his heart gives out due to a heart condition and Flint collapses. Barum turns around when he hears Flint cry out, and the rest of the companions catch up, and Flint's able to say his goodbyes. He turns to Fizban and says he finally knows who the old wizard is and asks to not have to take the journey alone. Fizban promises as Flint dies. And he takes the dwarf's body to a pool of glassy black rock, which holds the image of all the stars in it. And upon reaching the center of the pool, they vanish, and Tanis notices the return of the constellation representing Paladin, the good dragon god. Barum the Everman then reveals that he was born shortly before the cataclysm, hundreds of years ago, and one day he and his sister Jazla found a jewel-encrusted column. It was actually the foundation stone of the King Priest Temple. And the King Priest was a powerful cleric who was responsible for the cataclysm. When they found this column, Barum was overcome with greed and tried to pry out one of the emeralds. Jazla sensed that something was wrong and tried to stop him, but in the struggle, she fell onto a rock and was killed. That's when Takesis manifested and seared the emerald into Barum's chest as a reward for freeing her. And she revealed that the column was a doorway to the abyss. But Jazla's pure spirit entered the column. She told Barum to run, and she blocks Takesis's escape. The Temple of Takesis was then built around that column, and ever since, the evil goddess's followers have sought Barum to break Jazla's enchantment and set her free. And Barum says that he's unable to die, or more accurately, he can die, but he always comes back due to the emerald embedded in his chest. So once all that's revealed, they journey to the Temple of Takesis, and they're almost discovered, but in an attempt to remove suspicion from the others, Tanis offers himself up to Kitiara in exchange for Lorana. Then Barum starts hearing the call of his sister and runs off to seek the jeweled column. Caramon follows him, while Tika and Tass run off in another direction to try and draw off pursuit. Kitiara and Tanis enter the Grand Council of Dragon Highlords, where Kitiara and Emperor Ariakas' armies almost come to blows, but Takesis herself manifests and restores order. Lord Soth then brings in Lorana, and Kitiara asks Takesis to accept Tanis into her service, and that Lorana be given to Lord Soth. Tanis is instructed to lay his weapons at the feet of the Emperor to symbolize his allegiance, and he considers killing Ariakas, but realizes the magic user has a force field protecting him. But then a voice in his head, emanating from a black robe wizard at Takisus' side, tells him to strike. And Tanis runs the Emperor through with his sword, and the magical shield disrupts at just the right moment to allow the killing blow through. Alarm sound signal the intrusion in the jeweled column chamber, and Takisus sends the black robe wizard to investigate. Tanis takes the Emperor's crown, which is the crown of power, and said that whoever holds the crown rules. And he plans to trade it for his and Lorana's lives, but Lorana believes that he has been corrupted at this point and overpowers Kitiara and shoves Tanis off the Emperor's platform, causing him to lose the crown, and chaos erupts as everyone tries to grab it. Meanwhile, Caramon and Barum have reached the chamber of the Jewel's Column, which is what set off that alarm, but they're blocked by the wizard in black robes, who is revealed now to be Raistlin. He explains that he allied with Takisus to gain power and the Key of Knowledge to unlock all those ancient spells, but he betrayed her by helping Tanis kill the Emperor, and then he allows Barum to throw himself to the column, reuniting the siblings and sealing the doorway to the abyss forever. Takisus is banished, and her temple begins to collapse. Raistlin helps Caramon, Tika, and Tas to escape before summoning a dragon to fly away. Caramon sees that his brother is now on this path of evil and offers to accompany him to try and help, but Raistlin refuses and departs. Tanis manages to fight his way out of the High Lord's chamber and catches up to Lorana, and he pleads forgiveness when Kitiara arrives and offers him one last chance to join her. He refuses and says he would die to protect Lorana. Then Kitiara tells them how to escape, and they flee as Lord Soth appears. And Soth accuses Kitiara of serving Tanis, but she says that her act of mercy is her final revenge, as now she will live in Tanis' thoughts forever. Soth then presents her with the Crown of Power. Tanis and Lorana meet up with Fizban, Caramon, Tika, and Tas. Fizban reveals that he is really the god Paladine, and explains that good and evil dragons will remain on Kryn to keep the balance. He also reveals to Caramon that Raistlin is helped by the spirit of the ancient evil wizard Fistan Dantalus. This is who he saw power from and whose book he was given way back in the first book of the series. He also implies to Tas that he will be going on a time-traveling adventure soon, which we'll see in the next few books, and that heroes go their separate ways. And the epilogue shows Raistlin claiming the Tower of High Sorcery in Palanthas, that ghost story magical place. Raistlin claims it as his own. So those are the three books that make up the Chronicles trilogy, which details the time period that becomes known as the War of the Lance, and how the companions became known as the Heroes of the Lance. Weiss and Hickman followed up that trilogy with the Legends trilogy, which focuses mostly on the twins, Raistlin and Caramon, as Raistlin continues down his dark path, seeking godhood. The first of these novels is called Time of the Twins. And in the intro, a devout cleric of Paladine named Crisania is determined to stop Raistlin pursuing his path of darkness. She actually meets with Asinus the Historian, as well as Raistlin himself. After the meeting, Raistlin actually invites her to his Tower of High Sorcery of Palanthas. It then jumps over to Solace, where Riverwind arrives at the Inn of the Last Home and meets with Tika. He asks about Caramon, who is revealed to have become a fat drunk since the companions parted 2 years before. Tanis later arrives with Crisania, and they had been chased by dark creatures sent by Raistlin. Tika casts Caramon out so that he will accompany Crisania, as well as Tas, on their journey to see what Raistlin is up to. Along the way, they are attacked by Lord Soth, who almost kills Crisania, but Paladine intervenes. And they continue to find out that Raistlin plans to travel back in time to take Takisus' place as the primary evil god. So they in turn travel back in time to stop his plans and to seek healing for Crisania. And they find themselves in pre-Cataclysm Istar, which in the previous books was home to the Sea Elves, but at this point in history is a holy empire and the seat of the King Priest, the most powerful cleric in the world, the person destined to cause the Cataclysm. Raistlin knows they've arrived and causes them to be discovered, gets Caramon sent off to the Games of Istar, which is basically gladiator-type situation, with the attempt to get him back into shape, And for his part, Caramon plans to kill Fistendantilus to save his brother, as Fizban had told him that that evil cleric was influencing him. So Caramon actually kind of goes along with his brother's plan because he gets back in shape in order to take on this evil mage. And once he's finally able to enact his plan, it's revealed that Raistlin has actually replaced Fistendantilus and has taken the ancient wizard's life force. Meanwhile, Crisania has been brought to the Temple of Paladin, home to the King Priest, and healed. She meets Raistlin in the King Priest's chamber, where he reveals that the King Priest is just a man, and she flees. Caramon plans to steal a device of time journeying that can return people to their proper time, but finds that Tass has taken it to stop the Cataclysm. Caramon also finds out that Raistlin has arranged for him to fight the friends that he's made in the gladiator arena, and finally decides that he needs to kill his brother. Tass and Crisania go to the chamber where the High Priest will cause the Cataclysm by calling on the gods, and Tass activates the device as that happens, but the device just falls apart in his hands. Caramon is forced to fight his gladiator friends, and it results in all their deaths. And then all three heroes seek Raistlin in his chamber as Istar crumbles around them. Crisania manages to stop Caramon from killing Raistlin long enough for the Dark Wizard to complete his time travel spell, which saves them all. And the novel ends with the Cataclysm striking and destroying Istar. The second book is The War of the Twins, where it's revealed that the adventurers are still in the past, but safely after the effects of the Cataclysm. Raistlin is seeking a portal to the Abyss in order to complete his ascension to godhood, and he bribes Astinus the Historian, who reveals that the portal is in the magical fortress of Zaman in the Dwarven Lands. Tass, meanwhile, finds himself in the Abyss, where he encounters Tachesis, and she tells him that he has altered time, which may allow her to take over the world. He also meets Nimsh, a gnome, who claims that he's a failure because all of his inventions worked. In gnomish society on Kryn, it's very highly revered to learn from all your mistakes and failed inventions. So since he didn't have any, he sees himself as a failure, even though everything worked. And Nimsh and Tass start fixing Tass's device of time journeying in order to escape the Abyss. Now, Raistlin, Caramon, and Crisania are kind of stuck recreating the history of Fistendantilus, who Raistlin has replaced in this version of the timeline. And so they create Fistendantilus' army, which marches on the Dwarven Kingdom of Thorbadin, seen in the previous trilogy. And they get hundreds to join, including the Hill Dwarves, who say they've been slighted by the Mountain Dwarves of Thorbadin. During all this, Crisania professes her love to Raistlin, and he rejects her, causing her to flee, and she plans to bring the word of the true gods back to the people 200 years before Goldmoon did so in the events of the previous trilogy. And Crisania finds a plague-struck village and tries to convert a false cleric, but discovers that people are still too angry to accept the true gods at this time. And then Raistlin goes on to raise the village in an immense fireball, trying to prepare Crisania to come with him to the Abyss to enact his plans. Caramon, who's now leader of the army, capture Pax Tharkas, the fortress from the original trilogy where the slave uprising happened, and Caramon's army is able to do so with the help of the Dark Dwarves. The Mountain Dwarves retreat to Thorbadin, and the dwarf hero Karas, whose hammer played a role in the previous trilogy, he attempts to assassinate Raistlin and severely wounds him, but Crisania heals the Dark Wizard's wounds, and then Tass and Nimsh manage to escape the Abyss, but are captured in Thorbadin. And Raistlin rescues Tass, but kills Nimsh, because in the original timeline, Nimsh led to Fistendantilus' death. Then the Dark Dwarves betray Caramon's army, slowly killing all the Hill Dwarves, and they attempt to kill Caramon, but are driven back. Raistlin and Caramon talk one last time before Raistlin and Crisania open the portal and Caramon and Tass activate the device of time journeying. And these actions in tandem cause this giant explosion that levels Zaman. And the book ends with Raistlin overcoming this giant explosion that killed Fistendantilus in the original timeline, and he's able to enter into the Abyss. The third book, The Test of the Twins, starts off with Caramon and Tass arriving 2 years later than they intended, and they find a gray, desolate world where the sky is dominated by an hourglass constellation, which of course is the symbol of Raistlin, as it's the shape of his pupils. In this timeline, Raistlin managed to defeat both Paladin and Takesis, but the world is devoid of life as a result. Nothing more than gray sludge. The pair even find Caramon's corpse before they find the few living beings, one of which is Asinus. And they are given Asinus's last book of Kryn's history and told not to allow Raistlin to exit the Abyss. Speaking of which, Raistlin is in the Abyss facing magical trials in the form of these illusions. Crisania, meanwhile, is protecting his body, but she's severely hurt and blinded. When Raistlin finally overcomes the illusion, he abandons Crisania, as she has served her purposes. Back in the normal timeline, Tanis arrives at the High Claris Tower in time to see Kitiara appear in a flying citadel and float right over the tower. So he flies off to Palanthas to warn them and prepare the defenses. Caramon and Tass finally get into their proper timeline and also arrive at Palanthas and read Asinus's book to discover that Tanis will die in battle against Lord Soth. So Tass heads to Raistlin's Tower of High Sorcery to try and save his friends. Tanis and Caramon are able to take control of the citadel, then also head to the tower, which Kitiara has entered and encountered Raistlin's servant slash apprentice, Dalimar, who's actually a spy who's trying to stop Raistlin's ascension to godhood. And from Asinus's book, the heroes discover that Dalimar is supposed to die, but the heroes arrive in time to stop Kitiara from killing Dalimar, but she is mortally wounded at this point. And Dalimar is too weak to take on Raistlin, so Caramon enters the Abyss. Lord Soth then shows up to claim Kitiara's body, and Tanis eventually lets him take her. Caramon finds Raistlin in the Abyss, and the mage is able to see the dark future that his course of action will lead to, and he stands down, giving Caramon his staff to seal the portal and stop Takesis from the other side, while Raistlin stays in the Abyss. And the dark goddess attacks Raistlin, but he falls into a dreamless sleep and is protected from her by Paladin. Caramon rescues Crisania on his way out and closes the portal behind them. The Battle of Palanthas is won by the people of Palanthas at the cost of most of their city. Crisania is healed, though permanently blind, and becomes the head of the Church of Paladin. Caramon returns to his wife Tika. Tass finds a spot on the map he has never been to and teleports away using the device of time journeying. And that's where the book and the Legends trilogy ends. Now, from there, a whole bunch of other authors write all kinds of different stories on Dragonlance. Basically, anything that you're interested in gets its own book at some point. Weiss and Hickman also eventually return to the story, continuing the narrative with the second generation and the children of some of the heroes of the Lance. But those stories don't seem like they're going to be highly impactful on the new book, Dragons of Deceit. And I'll get to that a bit later, but eventually, after a few other stories, Weiss and Hickman write The Lost Chronicles, which is a trilogy of books that take place during the original Chronicles trilogy and fills in some of the gaps that they had left. So in the first book, The Dragons of the Dwarven Depths, it picks up where Dragons of Autumn Twilight leaves off, like right afterwards, and details how the companions protect the refugees that they saved in Pax Tharkas from the dragon armies who continue to attack them. It details how they get them the Thorburden, retrieve the Hammer of Karas, and root out the dragon army influence and invasion of Thorburden, and convince the dwarves there to temporarily house the refugees. The second book, Dragons of the High Lord Skies, takes place around the same time as the second book, Dragons of Winter Night, and it details Kitiara's actions more during that time, including how she influenced the Knights of Salamnia and specifically Derek Crownguard, and how she gained the allegiance of Lord Soth. The book also fleshes out the rivalry between Sturm and Derek, and portrays how Lorana and her group were able to defeat the White Dragon High Lord and retrieve their dragon orb, which was kind of glossed over in the original book. And then the third book, Dragons of the Hourglass Mage, takes place during Dragons of Spring Dawning, and it details how Raistlin managed to use Tachesis to gain more power, how he joined her organization, and which we saw the ramifications of in the book, but not the origins of. All right, so those are the main books I wanted to talk about today, except for, of course, Dragons of Deceit, which is the beginning of a new trilogy known as Destinies. And here's the little blurb that they've released for this upcoming book. Destina Rosethorn, as her name implies, believes herself to be a favored child of destiny. But when her father dies in the War of the Lance, she watches her carefully constructed world come crashing down. She loses not only her beloved father, but also the legacy he has left her, the family lands and castle. To save her father, she hatches a bold plan, to go back in time and prevent his death. First, she has to secure the device of time journeying, last known to be in the possession of the spirited Kender Tasselhoff Burfoot. But to change time, she'll need another magical artifact, the most powerful and dangerous artifact ever created. Destina's quest takes her from the dwarven kingdom of Thorburden to the town of Solace and beyond, setting in motion a chain of disastrous events that threaten to divert the course of the River of Time, alter the past, and forever change the future. So, previews of the actual text of the book reveal that that other magical artifact, that most powerful and dangerous artifact ever created, is in fact something known as the Grey Gem. Now, this artifact prominently appears in the books Weiss and Hickman write, known as The Second Generation and Dragons of Summer Flame. These two books set up the children of the Heroes of the Lance and detail the story of the Chaos War, respectively. And during this Chaos War, the Grey Gem, this artifact that actually houses the entity known as Chaos, father of all the gods, is destroyed and Chaos is released. So two details from this blurb for the Dragons of Deceit kind of point to the fact that it's taking place before the second generation set of books. One is that the Grey Gem is still around, which it's destroyed during the Chaos War. And two, and to a lesser extent, the fact that Tasselhoff is there because he dies in the Chaos War, although he shows up afterwards due to time travel shenanigans anyway. So that one's not as definite. But the fact that the Grey Gem is still around implies that it takes place before the Chaos War, so right after the books that we've detailed here. I think it's also worth noting that the books after Chronicles and Legends are kind of a mixed bag with fan reaction for a whole bunch of reasons, some of which are that the following heroes after the Heroes of the Lance don't quite live up to the predecessors. Some say that the events that took place in those original trilogies is kind of undone in the following books. Others say that the heroes, both the ones who are alive and the ones who are dead, are done disservices in various ways, either dying in silly ways or being brought back in silly ways, various things like that. Which, of course, any book is going to have various levels of, you know, people liking or not liking it. But it's interesting to see that they're going forward with a trilogy of books that takes place during what seems to be the most popular timeline, the War of the Lance timeline, or at least its immediate after effects. And then also dealing with time travel again, which could allow them to really do whatever they want with how the story goes. They could bring back people who are already dead. They could completely rewrite things that they don't really like, especially during this time when D&D is really emphasizing this multiverse type of thing. It'll be interesting to see how much they continue with and how much they go back on. It definitely does seem like a very interesting way to kind of have the best of both worlds of being able to, well, we want to keep these elements, but we also want to get rid of these other elements. So I'm very interested to read it to see what they choose to do and how they choose to set up Dragonlance for this new generation. People who have just come in for 5th edition, which again, with hundreds of novels, all kinds of adventures, and yet also a decade of the setting just languishing. So I think it's definitely smart to do like a hard reset where here you can just jump in and learn this new status quo instead of having to worry about everything. I'm interested to see how they do that through the novels, this new trilogy, and also through the new adventure that's coming out and the war game, board game thing that they're also putting out later this year. So it's a really cool year to get into Dragonlance. So it makes sense for them to want to open it up to people. But I feel like the books are definitely going to be filled with references, especially to the books that I've detailed here today, but I'm sure other books as well. So it'll be cool to see how all those elements are brought together, intertwined, and refreshed into a new form of some case. Although I could be completely wrong and they just reset it to the normal status quo. So we'll just have to wait and see. I'm excited. Thank you very much for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend. Want to try to help this podcast grow and reach new people? This has been Eldritch History. My name is Jacob Tomlinson Korst. And until next time, may always make your saving throw, especially against getting your whole history rewritten by somebody with a divisive time journey, unless it winds up being for the better. I don't know, we'll see.